Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brent.
Yesterday, I think the biggest complaint most people had was probably bullpen usage, going to Montero, sticking with Montero. And I think adding, not to say you'd go to Javier in this situation regularly, but I think it would be an option in the playoffs. Lance McCullers looks like he's going to be a part of the starting rotation. And I told you, I think that's going to be the biggest part of a healthy Lance McCullers, is having a weapon who you can rely on in the bullpen. I told you guys earlier in the year, Christian Javier was my favorite Astro. And it's because of what he did in the postseason. Was it 2020? I think it was 2020, the role that he played. It might have been 20.
Was it the Boston series a year ago, right, where he was really big? Where he came
It was before that, the first time.
When they were struggling to find guys to go five innings, he was always a guy that kind of picked up the pieces and then did his job.
But he did it even before last year. And so that's it for me. But I am curious, like, of the many, many positives that come from it, what's number one for you?
The positives for me, and again, that's why I've been very careful to say, look, I've got to see so much between now and the end of the regular season before I draw definitive conclusions and opinions. But if Lance McCullers shows you a couple more times that the chances are greater that he's going to continue to get closer to where he was before he was injured than a guy that's going to be struggling to find durability in his arm and a place on this on this roster in the playoffs, it is just a massive wealth of riches to kind of sort through. I just think the ability, you know, because one of the things I think early on, as adamant as I was as adding bullpen arms, the picture becomes clearer to me now that they knew what they were going to be headed towards, right? They weren't going to go out and spend any kind of capital to get a guy that might or might not be an eighth or ninth inning guy when they knew that your bullpen was going to get stronger by adding two reliable, trusted arms that could come out of your bullpen, like Javier and assume it's Garcia, who could just be your long guy. That makes the back end guys stronger, better, right? Because Neris could be anything from a quick one out guy to a guy that, because he can bounce back, to a guy that can give you multiple innings. When you have to figure out what Montero is, but when you have the ERA and the season that Stanek has put together, he throws 100 miles an hour. He could be eighth inning, seventh inning. You have so much flexibility for a guy that seemingly needs it in the managerial role that you have gotten stronger after the deadline again, and no other team in baseball has the same luxury.
What you're saying about the flexibility that he needs in bullpen managing.
You know exactly what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I don't disagree, but I think it has a lot to do with why I'm not as worried about the batting order. I think he's going to have the talent. You know,
well, but you can have all the talent in the world, but if you bat the wrong guys at the top of the lineup, you could screw everything up, too.
Yeah, I'm not saying he can't hurt them. I just think, thankfully, because there is so much talent, you know.
Like, for instance, never should there be a scenario where Altuve isn't one of the guys that gets five at-bats a game instead of four.
Yeah, I mean.
But that's because he's a leadoff guy. But if you bat Dubon or, for some ungodly reason, a Jake Myers or even a Pena in the playoffs, I don't think they should be in the top three or four in the batting order.
I just think, generally speaking, and I'm not saying there's no exceptions to this. Shoot, yesterday may have been an exception to it. I don't think you're going to win or lose games very often because of one at-bat for a guy or two. I'm not saying never.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because of Dusty.
No.
Because you definitely could be in a situation where you could lose games because of Dusty.
I'm not necessarily saying that. I don't think you're losing games because Altuve had one last at-bat very often. I'm not saying never.
Depends on who gets the at-bat instead.
Yeah, but even if it's Dubon, like, if Yordan was up yesterday, or Bregman, who's hotter, when Dubon was up, would you have felt like they were going to win the game? You would have felt better.
I would think their chances are better.
Yeah, their chances are better. All I'm saying is that one thing isn't going to make or break you. But when it comes to the postseason, when you add Garcia and you add Javier to the bullpen, I think it is conceivable. And there's a long time before then. Things can change. Injuries, guys can cool off. you know, you don't know what to expect from Montero the rest of the way. I think it is conceivable that you could go through the whole postseason and feel good about who is pitching every single inning.
So this is the caveat that you have to consider. With the schedule coming out yesterday, you do realize that there is, like, no days off. When they get to the heat of it, the push is going to be intense. And the fact that they have a luxury, like I said, that most teams don't have, gives me more confidence that regardless of what Dusty does, you're in a great position. Again, it goes back to my point that a great team can overcome questionable managerial decisions, and it's not just offensively. I think as it relates to the pitching staff, the fact that you have all these options, you have all these starters, you have the ability that most teams don't have, especially if the other team is down in the series and there's no days off, and you're trying to push a guy back quicker to come back on short rest, as opposed to a team that's loaded with starters and loaded with
bullpen. Yeah, I don't think you're going to do that anywhere. I'm not
saying never. You shouldn't have to. But again, you're eliminating guys that you were questioning whether they should be factors in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Right? Seth Martinez.
So are you with regulars.
I'm starting to get there.
Because you pushed back on it initially, but I think it sounds like you're there with me.
Well, because of when you factor in all the different elements from the schedule to and the depth, to getting better in the bullpen, which was something that I was focused on, that I was, Will Smith wasn't the answer I was looking for, although it was helpful. The fact that now when I see the bigger picture that Click saw about the guys that were going to be sent to the bullpen to make the bullpen stronger, I have more hope that this team is so complete, it is so good, it is so talented, that no matter what the manager chooses to do, not do, or the decisions and the batting orders that he makes, that this team, especially when you look at the landscape of the rest of baseball, when I say we know the Yankees are scuffling, and you can say, well, it's easy to just say a team's losing 8 out of 10 games. But then when you lose Carpenter, when they trade away one of their better starting pitchers and they don't know what their rotation's going to be, the fact that the swing and miss lineup is either home run or bust now, and that Stanton's been out and they've had other injuries, the Dodgers lose Walker Buehler. The Dodgers have started to start feeling some of this. I feel better that not only all the things we mentioned, but the fact that the Astros are healthier and they can do a six-man rotation with most teams trying to figure it out, they're in the best spot.
Fuentes Respector on Twitch says, with the depth we have, Fromber 2021 World Series gets snuffed out in a hurry. Like, that is something that you're going to have the luxury to do. You're going to be able to...
Wait, Fromber what? No, Fromber 2021...
World Series. I think that... Be it Garcia or be it Javier, you're going to have the flexibility to make those kind of decisions.
See, Fromber's still going to be heavily leaned on.
Right. No doubt about it.
I don't think there's anything that says Lance McCullers Jr. should be number two in your rotation in a World Series. Do you?
I think it's possible. I'm not saying that right now.
That's a huge jump. It's one thing to say he's going to be in the rotation. It's another thing that he is going to supersede a guy that all year long, from his earned run average and his strikeout pitches and his ability to pitch big, and have quality starts, I don't think anything uproots Fromber from two.
Honestly, I think at the end of the day, I don't think it's a huge debate one way or the other. I think we need to see way more from Lance McCullers before we're going to commit to him anywhere. But I think if you feel good enough to have Lance McCullers in the starting rotation, it means you probably feel pretty damn good about him. You feel really good about 1, 2, 3, and honestly, you feel pretty good about number four. But the thing is, before Lance McCullers returned, I would have argued already that it was Javier that should have been going to the pen. And I think you and Jeremy would push back on me on that.
I personally would only push back if you didn't see the sudden surge of Urquidy. And also the kind of
really so it's Urquidy
and,
you would kind of
yeah and because you're dealing
I just assumed it was Garcia.
But no, because you're dealing with the regression of Garcia. Like Garcia, who was so good last year, who was good this whole season, all of a sudden has shown you that he's starting to have a little bit of a slip-up, and it's been multiple starts to where there was a guy that I was ready to pencil in mid-season as a guy that was going to be in your playoff rotation. Now, I don't know where he goes, but I know the one thing that he's not going to be is a guy that I'm relying on as a starting pitcher in the playoffs right now, the way he's pitching. So it's a combination of things. Urquidy stepped up, Garcia's come back, and the fact that with McCullers showing you what he's showing you, you have a different set of options that make sense for you come playoff starters.
Now, you asked me before we went to the break if I thought Dusty saw Javier as a true weapon, a guy to go to in high
right.
leverage. He wasn't used that way out of the pen in the regular season.
Let's also define. To me, a manager that sees a weapon in the bullpen is a high leverage back of the bullpen guy.
I don't think it has to be back of the bullpen. High leverage, yes.
See, I think that when you think of a weapon, right? I think weapons are guys with big names, with big pitches, that come in with big stones and shut the door. I think that Javier can come in a high leverage, but it's in the Boston series. It's coming in to pitch three or four innings, to soak up innings, keep you in the ballgame, and don't give up any runs.
Do you think they're regularly going to need three or four innings out of him in the postseason? I'm not saying never.
Well, but a year ago, did you think that you were going to have starters that couldn't get you five innings? Right?
You didn't have the depth that you have right now,
though. What I'm saying, well, it was close. You still had the good young arms that were doing what they're doing again this year. When you look at it, you shouldn't assume that this pitching staff, these starting pitchers, are going to give you any less than five or six innings in the playoffs. But it's possible. So I think things could change. But obviously, the way you look at the structure right now and the stats and what they've done all season long, it's not unreasonable to think that high leverage for this team starts in the seventh inning.
I'm sorry, you said it's not impossible to think it does start in the seventh?
It's not impossible to think it doesn't start until the seventh
inning.
That's
kind of what I'm saying.
When you need another pitcher.
Like, he didn't use Javier as a high leverage guy in the regular season. He was using him. I mean, he was pitching, if I remember correctly, I think he was pitching in some blowouts. And that was one of the frustrations that this show had.
Yeah, because we knew that it took him a little longer to bounce back.
I am definitely the calmest on Dusty's decisions. I don't have an issue with you guys going at the problems he has, but I am the calmest of the three. If you go into the postseason with Javier in your bullpen and you don't use him like a weapon, that's malpractice.
But as a weapon, you don't want to burn him either, right? So you can say you got a weapon, but what do you define weapon as? To me, a weapon is a guy that you know in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, when you put him in, lights out, doors closed, lock, stock, and barrel, it's over. I think that you can use a weapon, so to speak, because you want to get out of a situation in the fifth or the sixth with guys on base. But that's I don't think that the magnitude of how you refer to a weapon is as great when you're looking for a guy that I think that's how Dusty looks at Javier. Javier's a guy.
Man, I hope not.
That if I call his number now, he can get me out of this. But then he's looking to Javier to give you an extra inning or two, which I don't think he should do.
I'm fine with using him for two or three innings in a game where maybe, you know, you got a 1-2-run lead. You feel like you got a chance, but your starter is gassed after five. And you go, look, we think we can hang on to this. I want to get two or three more out of Javier. I'm fine with him in that scenario. What I don't want to see is Javier come into games where they're down three or four runs and your starter's gassed after five innings. As long as he stays out of that scenario, I think you can mix and match. I think you can throw Javier into a close ball game where the pitcher's got to come out early. I think you can throw him in for a big inning in the eighth. Like, I think you should be able to use – that's what a weapon is. A weapon is somebody you can use, you know, all over the place. And most weapons probably aren't going two or three innings ever. I don't think Javier has to do that every time.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Going back to what Jeremy said about trying to piggyback guys to get nine innings and having, you know, those type situations. When you look at it, are you better off just definitively saying my four starters, and assuming Lance continues to do what he's doing, are you better off saying my four playoff starters right now are McCullers, Urquidy, Fromber, and JV? Or are you better off saying my four playoff starters are Fromber, JV, McCullers, and then I'm going to do piggybacks?
I'm with you on not.
I hate the piggyback idea.
I'm okay with piggybacking Garcia. It's not the way I would go about it. I have no interest in using Javier in a piggyback.
I don't starting like it matters, at all.
Your starting pitching is going to be fine, whoever number four is.
That's what I'm saying. I think you have four quality starters to where you never have to consider piggybacking. Even in a seven-game series, I don't think you'd even get to a piggyback in a game five scenario. Whether you're up or down, I think with the luxury you have, the bigger thing is going to be you save your weapons. Garcia could be your long guy to eat up innings, and Javier is going to be your guy that could give you multiple innings but can get you out of any scenario when you don't want to burn your closer or Stanek or your back of the bullpen guy.
713-780-3776 if you want to weigh in. We may keep this going on the other side. What's the most important thing about a healthy Lance in the postseason? Also, despite the frustrating loss yesterday, and I know it was, I think you should still feel really good about your chances of holding off the Yankees for the one seed. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before you go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. I'm going to tell you about them again because they get you results. And it's not just for guys. It's for women, too. It starts with the fact that they do hormone therapy, and they can get you with more energy in your life on a daily basis in really no time at all. And it's all it takes is setting up your first appointment. You go and visit them. You tell them what you're dealing with. They get you on a program. You start feeling better immediately, and you have more energy on a day-to-day basis. You're not trying to win the Olympics. You're trying to win the day. With everything you got going on your plate, from your job and all its responsibilities to your family responsibilities to trying to stay in shape and be in the gym, your health is your wealth, and you need to invest in yourself by going to the people at Apollo Men's Health. Check them out right now. Go to apollomh.com. See all the different ways that they can help you with all the different services they offer, and set up an appointment. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted and discounts for military personnel and first responders. But more so, you're going to find out these people care about their patients. They're going to ask you some tough questions, but they're going to want to find out what your goals are and what you're trying to get to. They're going to set you up on a plan that works. They're going to get you a program that gets you results. They're going to get you where you need to go. I believe in these people because they've helped me, and they can help you too. And if you mention my name, Joel Blank, you're going to get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first visit. But get the process started today. Make an appointment and check out the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What's the most important thing about a healthy Lance McCullers in the postseason? I got to admit, maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Dr. Dre on Twitch, LMC still has to walk through the minefield known as September. That's probably fair. I'm not worried about what this rotation looks like or what the bullpen looks like without Javier. I just get excited about the idea of adding him to the bullpen and not feeling like you missed a beat. Because I don't feel like you would.
I mean, see, this is why I hate talking about him so much until he actually shows me multiple starts. And the bigger thing to me is just the health factor. Look, I'm not discounting for a second that when this guy's on the mound, that from the thought process of being a starting pitcher to the results and the stuff to get guys out on a consistent basis and be considered a top end of the rotation guy, he's got all that. But because this has happened now before, and because we endured Tommy John, and now we endured 7.5 months of whatever the hell this was without any kind of medical procedure to make it, to fix it and make it better, there's no guarantees to me. So this is the first big step of the next steps that I needed to see before I was convinced that this guy was going to be one of the guys in the playoffs. Now, I need to see more of that, and I need to see him recover, because here's the other thing, Brendan, you got to take into consideration. The six-man rotation right now is ideal for him. It's ideal for everybody watching this team. It's not going to be ideal in the playoffs.
No.
So whatever he's doing now, the way he's bouncing back now, that's all fine and dandy. But when he has to do 5 days rest and, God forbid, short rest, now you're talking about a whole different set of concerns for me.
With Lance?
Yeah, because of the medicals.
That's tough, because I don't disagree, but you're not going to get to see short rest. Like, you're just going to walk into short rest without getting to see that chance. Unless you, manufacture it in the regular season, but that I can't imagine they would do that.
I can't imagine that they wouldn't consider everything and put everything on the table.
That would be wild. Imagine the Astros pivoting to a 4-man rotation just to see how Lance looks.
No, they're not going to do it in the regular season.
That's what I'm saying. You're not going to get a chance to see him on short rest.
But medically, you better be doing every test necessary and maybe overly cautiously extra MRIs or extra this or that, so that you realize exactly what you're dealing with. It's the same reason when Urquidy had the second setback with the shoulder in the same year, that you should have been making sure that you were hypersensitive to everything with his shoulder and doing every kind of medical, because he was an important cog that you couldn't count on. I don't want to get to a playoff scenario where I'm counting on a guy where the medicals say things change from the regular season to the playoffs, and as much as I'm counting on him, I'm not sure we can.
That's fair.
Have the confidence to do so,
and
at least.
I don't even disagree. I don't think you're going to be crushed if you don't have him. It would be disappointing. I think morally, fans would be.
Again, because you're in that luxury scenario that I painted a segment or two earlier, where even after trading a starting pitcher, you're still better off than any team in baseball in terms of the depth you have with starters, to where it wouldn't be crushing. But I think that because of how the fans have taken to what he's done so far, and it obviously it's just one start on the big league level.
It's hard not to get excited by that
but
start, though.
It's jacked people up enough that if he's now suddenly the plug gets pulled at a certain point, it'll be I don't know, devastating, but it'll be a hard pill to swallow.
King of all twitches, I'm not worried about the damn arms. The bats are the risk.
Well, there is definitely still a big concern with the bats.
Big? There's a concern. Now, I agree. I don't know if I'm going to go as far as
the Bregman awakening has allowed you to kind of step back the concern with the offense. But all season long, this offense has underachieved.
Sure.
Some people will say it's because of the lineups, the injuries, and Dusty. I'll say that based on the slow starts of Bregman and Yuli, and then losing a Brantley, and the uncertainty in center field, there's obviously concerns with the offense.
I feel like, to some extent, the Astros are coming around a little bit on Mancini. He's been out there.
What do you
more
mean coming around?
I think like they're more play willing more? To play him.
I think they have to, though. They also realize with Michael Brantley out of the lineup, their hands are being forced to the fire.
But
let me ask you this: if Brantley was coming back still, and we didn't know he's going to be out for the year, would they have the same philosophy towards Mancini? Because I don't think they would.
No, I don't think they would either. I don't disagree with that. But I just. The bats are the worry for sure. I think you are going to go into most, if not all, postseason series feeling like you have the edge on pitching depth, starting rotation / bullpen. Like as a whole, you're going to feel like you have the pitching win. And I think the value that you have in this batting lineup when it's fully healthy is that it's deep. Mm-hmm. It might not have the star power beyond Yordan that you'd like it to have, depending on what Bregman ends up being the rest of the year. But I do think you're going to feel okay with almost everybody at the plate when you're putting out your best lineups.
Yeah, I just think that you have so many concerns about will they put them in the lineup because of where they would have to play defensively. It's one thing if you're just inserting a guy into the lineup and saying you're going to be the DH today. But if you're going to have to play where Dusty doesn't want to play a guy, like say you're going to have to play Chaz in center field, which he doesn't want to do for some reason. Or you're going to have to play in order to have your best lineup. You're going to have to find a home for Aledmys Diaz. And look, as good as he has been offensively and the bat that he brings that you're looking for, he looked pretty bad in left field the other night. And so it's one thing to say if Peña's not hitting, you can play him at shortstop or you can play him at second base. But Altuve, assuming he's in the lineup and he's not hurt in the playoffs, you're not sitting him down. So where are you finding a home for some of these guys that aren't going to be misfit defensively or not where Dusty wants to play them?
Yeah, I don't have a great answer for that. As I told you earlier, I maybe wrongly so, I just don't worry about the defense. I sort that out later.
I was amazed, and I'd like to find that stat. Someone had it.
That's why I want Vasquez on the field, but
the Astros' defensive rating was higher than any team in baseball, with the Tigers, I think, being second on one of the tweets I saw last night. And I'm like, man, people really have been selling this team short defensively. And now maybe some of that also factors into a season-long series and guys that can cut the balls off in the gaps and make the five-star catches. But again, this goes back to what Jeremy and I have been harping on all year, which is you can crap on Peña not hitting the ball lately. You can never crap on his range and defensive ability.
By the way, were you keeping an eye on the Yankees game yesterday?
To some degree.
I don't typically too much, but it just feels like the Astros, as much as the Yankees are reeling, I know that the offense only scored two yesterday, but the offense has been going again. You feel it's hard not to feel as much frustration as there is with Dusty today. I think the overwhelming sense that I feel about the Astros right now is hopeful, optimistic, excited. And so yesterday I was keeping an eye on the Yankees game because I thought you had a chance to extend the lead to 3.5. You got 45 games left. You have a really favorable schedule. I brought it up because you mentioned Siri, and he had a big hit to extend their lead yesterday.
Cole pitched his ass off and only gave up one run.
Yeah, I don't think it ended up mattering. I think it was 4-0 finish.
It finished 4-0, but it really seems like as much as we will be critical of different things with this team, and I realize where they sit record-wise and in the division, if you just look at the overall kind of, is it optimism or pessimism? I think everything around the Astros is optimistic. Like I said, they're going to get better. They're going to get deeper. They're going to continue to roll. If the black cloud that's over the Bronx right now is fun to watch, because it's like for as much as they've been sitting high on the hog all year, it is like doomsday every day for the Yankees, and I love it.
Joel, I know you've been in this camp for a while. I'm curious to have the discussion, though. Could you possibly leave this season with happy with anything but a World Series win. We'll get to that on the other side.
I'm not answering right now.
ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You know, the one thing about being on this side of the glass,
yeah,
it's harder to eat when people bring us in food.
It's the struggle is real based on the time constraints, but when you get it, if the coworkers are as considerate as they should be, and they allow you, based on the fact that you are up against time constraints, to get in and get out and still have food to choose from, it can be very beneficial.
Buffalo Bayou Brewing brought us in some pizza, some wings. I couldn't tell quite what it was with the chips. It looked like almost a pulled pork.
Or a beef.
It
looked good.
Everything is good. I have to talk now. I don't get to stuff my face like I normally do on the other side of the glass. Sean, can you host the next 15 minutes while I eat?
Yeah, I got you. So, Joel.
Yes.
Could you possibly leave this season happy with anything but an Astros World Series win? How's that?
I would actually answer that question no. And it's simply because of how much I've stressed over the last several years the importance of getting a second World Series title to kind of validate how good this team has been for this almost 6 years and to kind of silence all of the naysayers, critics, and asterisk-waving people that want to hate on the Astros. If they get another one, there is no denying or mistaking how good this team has been, not only this year, but for the last 6 years, on a run that gets to start being historic in terms of how many times you've gotten to the World Series and appeared in the League Championship Series and done the things that they've done. But if you again fall short, you just add it to the list of the Braves and the Nationals and the what could have beens, to where people start saying it's just not everything that you're trying to make it up to be. You don't have to try and make it anything if they win it all. But if you don't win it all and it just becomes another loss like the Braves and the Nationals, then I think the luster's still missing something.
I feel the same this year because it's felt like for a while now, at least in the AL, and maybe this is unfair because they were trailing the Yankees for quite a while there, but it started to feel like the Astros are in the driver's seat. And Vegas agrees with that, by the way. Like, the Astros are now the favorite.
Sure has.
The Astros are now the favorite to win the AL. And it's tough when you feel that for such a long period of the season. And you feel like, I personally don't think there's a clear significant weakness to this team. I know that they haven't been scoring runs the way you'd like them to. But I think that they're capable of scoring runs. And I think you're going to be capable of winning low-scoring games. I think you're going to be able to rely on your pitching, both starting and bullpen. So this year, it would be a little bit tougher. What was interesting to me, and I wasn't following the team as closely the last couple of years. Like, obviously, I was here, so I was enjoying the runs they had. I didn't think either of the last 2 years felt nearly as much like that. Because last year, you were struggling to get out of the fifth inning with any of your pitchers seemingly every day.
Well, but not all year you weren't.
No. Sure, but you get to the postseason. It felt like a lot of times in the postseason last year, at least as an outside observer, somebody who wasn't watching them every day, it felt like you almost overachieved in the postseason. Not compared to the regular season, but like I was watching games and going, how is this team continuing to win every series? Like, what is happening? And in 2020, you didn't even, I know, 60 game season, but you didn't even win the regular season division.
See, here's where I would argue and push back on that, because I would say going into the playoffs, and Vegas would tell you this, that there was more than a shadow of a doubt that the Astros could continue to do what they were doing. When you saw them and the way they attacked the playoffs and the way they just looked like the team that everybody was starting to talk about, the White Sox, they just basically said, we don't care how good your offense is and how many hits you get and what you do. We can do whatever you're doing better. And they looked like they were, until the McCullers start, which I questioned from the minute they were considering it and saying, when you're in a position of strength and you're up in the series, there's no need to do what they did. But even after he started, I didn't think the injury at the time or when he left the game that they were in a situation of doom and gloom to where after that game.
Talking about Lance?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was thought that he could pitch in the World Series
right.
at one point
but
in time.
But I'm saying even before we knew that he might miss a start and this might be more than just taking him out early in a game, I think that they became the front runners again. And that it wasn't just, even when they got to the World Series against the Braves and there was uncertainty about whether he'd pitch again. They were the favorites to win the World Series. So I think that whatever happened regular season, whatever happened when the playoffs started in terms of what people saw for who should win it, it quickly became the Astros to lose again.
Did you guys feel like the sense last year? Like, obviously there's heartbreak when you lose the World Series. But did you feel like the sense was that last year was a failure? Because I do think that that will be the sense this year.
It can't be a failure when you lose your best pitcher.
I guess maybe that's what I'm saying. Like, beyond that, because, like, you lost your best pitcher, but really you didn't have your best pitcher.
Right, without Lance McCullers, you
without
still
Justin Verlander.
Put up a fight and got to the World Series and did the best you've ever,
that, like,
you could.
That's what I think separates this year from last year. Like, you felt going in like the expectations were Super Bowl, World Series or bust. But the reality of the situation is you went in basically without Verlander. You lost McCullers in the playoffs. Like, you were piecemealing your way together to the World Series last year. And things can change. You got, you know, a month and a half left to go in the regular season and whatever happens in the postseason. It feels like failure would be the operative word this year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's not that built-in excuse of we lost this guy then, we didn't have this guy all year. Now, the Brantley excuse is one that people can go to. But as we saw what they did after they made the moves they made at the trade deadline, I don't think even a losing Brantley scenario is enough to not be, you know, grossly disappointed with anything short of a world championship, because the team was built to get there previous to the deadline. The team was enhanced at the deadline. And so that even when you lose, you trade away a starting pitcher and you lose a Brantley, the thought is you got better to where, and then when you look at the rest of the landscape and how many other teams are struggling and dealing with injuries and losing guys right now, that you shouldn't feel like anything short of a world championship. There's no reason why you shouldn't feel like anything short of a world championship for this season would be a disappointment or a failure.
I know your big thing is one more would help erase a lot of the stain that people have, like, in the national level.
Yep.
Does it matter when that one comes?
It doesn't have to be this year. And look, they're still loaded, as we've talked about. But I think the sooner the better. I think the sooner the better because of the fact that now you're not talking about the 17 roster and what was it, like four or five guys left from it. But yet the run has been sustainable. The stats in the regular season have been consistent. The runs to the championship series and the World Series have been better than most. But that one inescapable void is that could be filled and again, kind of rewrite the past and set the tone for the future that in history, this is a team that you need to remember. It doesn't have to be this year, but ideally it would be this year because you didn't get it last year.
Well, every year. Ideally, every year it would be that year. I was just curious where you felt.
But I think if
that.
You get another one now, if you go back to whether you've made the league championship series
things
or you lost
kind
the World
of crazy.
Series, then people start fluffing it a little bit.
And that's like, I think Jeremy has said before that he considers them to be a dynasty.
Yeah, he said that. Yeah,
and I push back on that, but I think you can start having the conversation if they win another World Series. Like, I think that's a fair conversation.
Absolutely.
Like, it's kind of weird, but you almost retroactively get to look at what they've done since 17 if they win a World Series right now.
Like, you look at the Buffalo Bills and you can't say it because they can make all the Super Bowls they want. They never won one.
Okay. Calling the Astros a dynasty is something that I wouldn't say, but at least they have the World Series.
They've won.
If you're calling anybody
a dynasty.
But it's tainted.
In a lot of people's mind, it's tainted. So therefore, that's why a lot of people rope it in with the Bills. Because if you look at it, like, the Spurs won almost every other year over like a 5 to 7 year window. So if you win two within a 5 or 6 year span,
and you also made
the league championship series every year, now you can start using the D word a little bit
more. What you did in the middle can get lost a little bit if you don't get another one somewhere in there. Because part of what makes what they've done so impressive is the consistency.
You can laugh at it if you consider that word now, but you can't laugh if they get multiples.
I think you can still laugh, but I think it becomes an instantly fair discussion.
It's less than
some
laughable.
Some people have really high standards for it, and I think that's understandable. We only have a couple minutes to get to this, but I did want to touch on it a little bit. How are you feeling about the odds? I know it's debatable whether or not you even want the one seed. And I think yesterday I flipped on it a little bit. I think I leaned towards no. I didn't realize the Astros have only had one AL one seed in this run. Yeah. And I feel really good about them. I expect them to beat anybody. The only team that currently scares me in the playoffs is the Yankees anyways. So,
The Dodgers?
Well, I'm sorry, in the AL.
In the American League.
Yeah, I'm talking in the American League. So if that's the case, I just assume, go for the home field advantage. How are you feeling about the odds they do it?
See, when the Yankees are scuffling, it's easier to say number one doesn't matter. But I think when you get to playoff baseball in the Bronx, it's going to matter. And you'd like the games that could decide the series on your home field. I look at the rest of the landscape in the American League, and like I said, even the one team that I thought had an outside chance to worry me in Toronto isn't doing a whole hell of a lot for me to be worried about them right now. And I understand the path of least resistance, but when I'm talking about silencing all critics, putting the past behind you, and establishing the franchise in this run that they're on, the ideal scenario would be we beat the Yankees to win the American League, and we beat the Dodgers in the World Series.
I think the tone of today is so different, and maybe unfairly so, if they don't blow that game. If you come into today up 3.5, you have the 7th easiest schedule in baseball the rest of the way. I don't know the last time the Yankees won a baseball game. I think you come into today feeling like you're on top of the world to an extent.
I know when they won their baseball game. They won an extra innings game on Saturday night in Boston. But
I think they've won 2 in August.
They're like 2-8 right now in their last 10. But I think that in the playoff scenario, the one thing that I would like is put it on them. It's not your fault that you didn't have to beat the Yankees or the Dodgers if they falter and lose. But you don't want the scenario to where we won it all, but we avoided playing either team.
Oh, I don't care about that much.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm just
I don't think
out.
People will remember that. You'll remember that here a little bit, but I don't think nationally.
You'll be reminded on social media.
I don't know that you
by
will.
By other fan bases, I think you would.
Man, I don't know. If you win a World Series, I don't think.
Here's the other thing. I think that as much as we talk about Yankees-Dodgers because of the history with the Astros, don't sleep on the Mets. If the Mets go out there and throw Scherzer and DeGrom at the top of their rotation, everyone in baseball's got a problem.
It does kind of feel like, fair or not, there's this sense of win the AL, then figure out the rest later.
Yeah.
I feel good about winning the
and
AL.
Key in L.A., who's just overselling the Dodgers on a daily basis, you better stop worrying about who you're playing in the World Series and get there, because the Mets are right there, and they are not going to be a joke in the playoffs.
Coming up next, I don't know who, but a member of the Wheelhouse will join us. We'll do some crosstalk. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brent.
Cody Stutz of the Wheelhouse joins us. They're going to be celebrating their one-year anniversary today. You guys got all members of your show in?
Yep.
Yeah, we had to celebrate an anniversary without one.
What's your feeling of that? When a guy celebrating a one-year anniversary decides to bow out on the day of the one-year anniversary of the show?
Well, he better have an acceptable reason, I suppose.
He does. He's okay. Got a pretty good reason.
Gotcha, okay.
We've just been giving him crap all day.
Yeah.
Which, God forbid, you'd want to do.
No, I wouldn't want to say anything, but we will celebrate the groundbreaking in the first year of the Wheelhouse of Bad Take Boulevard and how Jeremy has built a palatial mansion on Bad Take Boulevard. We will celebrate that.
You guys having him on?
Jeremy?
Yeah.
No, I'm not inviting him on the show. I'm trying to celebrate, not bring the mood down.
So, did you see yesterday the fan who may or may not have told Tony La Russa to send out a pinch runner in the eighth inning?
When we say may or may not have, we're just assuming that the fan told Tony La Russa what to do.
You buy that he
he
wouldn't have done that without the fan.
Yes.
I told you, if this was the only incident all year that you can remember negatively about Tony La Russa, probably people would scoff at that. But based on all the other missteps and the intentional walks after being up in the count 1-2, and not knowing the rules on a different game, and the nap time. Yeah.
The nap time, too.
I'm not, like, out on the possibility. I just also am not willing to go quite as far as to say it with confidence.
Brendan, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Fair enough. I'm just curious if you could say one thing to Dusty Baker, and not just about yesterday, but big picture. You could fix one thing by telling Dusty Baker what you want done differently. What would it be?
I would tell him, Dusty, all Trey Mancini does is beat cancer and hit bombs. Start him at first base.
Ooh, first base.
Yes.
I just want him in the lineup.
Yeah, I don't care where he plays.
That specific.
I want Yuli out of the lineup. I want Mancini into the lineup.
You and Branham on the same boulevard.
I mean, I tend to agree I like him at first base.
I didn't say it's Bad Take Boulevard, but they're driving together.
I'm just not as passionate about it. If he gets in the lineup, that's what I'm concerned about.
I don't know if is Yuli even hitting his body weight in August.
He got a hit last night, didn't he?
With a 193 batting
I'm
average.
Just asking the question.
I don't know. He's just he's had a terrible August. He had the fool me July, which fooled me and the Astros organization into thinking Yuli was back. And then August just turned into, oh, okay, yeah, Yuli's not back.
I hear they like those guys at the top of the lineup in big moments.
Oh, boy. Wouldn't Mancini just look so much better?
At least base percentages were both over 300 for the one and two spots.
To me, it's about getting Mancini in the lineup as well. I don't care that much about where guys bet. I guess Joel, he's concerned about the order.
I don't want to see guys that can't get on base at a 300 clip be your one and two guys when you're resting Altuve and whoever else you're resting. But obviously everybody knows my desire to have Trey in the lineup every day. I'm not going to go as far as to say he has to play first base every day, but I need his bat in the lineup every day.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that really kind of bothers me is when Dusty sits a top four hitter in the lineup and decides whoever's filling in, they're good enough to be in that
part. They're automatically in that spot.
You just write them in where you take the other guy out, and that's not how it works.
It was weird yesterday because you had the lineup, right, with Peña batting first, and then it comes out and they're like, oh, it only changes who's playing there. They did lead, like he didn't touch the order at all.
Yes, it's running just Mauricio Dubon out there is a.
As I put it, the simplest way you can look at this, if you're not more than if you're just an average baseball fan, is: do you want Altuve or Yordan or Tucker or Bregman getting that fifth at bat in a nine inning game, or do you want Dubon and Yuli and somebody else?
My ultimate thought was that was not great yesterday, and I think it's really easy to go there after yesterday, because when the lineup turns at the top of the ninth inning and you got two guys on base down two, usually you're starting to get a little bit of excitement. And I don't think that's what Houston fans were feeling yesterday.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was ready to turn it off. And then when I knew Vasquez was coming up, I held out hope that you had a better than average pinch hitter that could have done something. But on the first pitch, he popped up.
Well, Vasquez got on base.
No, he didn't. Vasquez was the last out last night, was he not?
I think Dubon was the last out. Am I misremembering this?
I was more annoyed with the pitching change than the lineup.
I mean, look, that's not even a discussion.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was more annoyed with the...
And it's not only that he went to get him, but who we replaced him with.
I wouldn't have gone and got him, and if I was going to replace him, I would have replaced him with somebody that had not just gotten smoked the day before.
I would not have gone and got him either. I didn't have a major issue with who they went to for one out.
Oh.
I had a bigger issue with leaving him in there when it was very clear things were not working.
That's the thing. You didn't have another guy warming up. You should have had both mounds being fully executed in the bullpen so that you had options.
I thought once the bases were loaded and you left him in there that you were just saying, we're going to lose this game. Or if we're going to win, it's going to be on the backs of the offense in the ninth.
Mm. I don't like that. If A.J. Hinch was the manager, they'd have 100 wins.
Currently?
You better stop with that notion. That's going to catch. You're going to catch all kinds of boulevards.
So I made Joel today because he wants to embrace the suck, and I mostly agree with that. But I made him drink some of the Texans Kool-Aid. I'm curious, what's the biggest Texans Kool-Aid you're drinking this year?
Give me a long neck bottle of Davis Mills Kool-Aid. Yes, absolutely.
You know I like Davis Mills too, but I can't believe that going to number one.
Yeah, that's what other Kool-Aid versions on the Texans would I be drinking?
Well, I think Damian Pierce is the easy one.
I think Petrie's another one.
Petrie's a really good one.
Yeah.
Damian Pierce was the...
After week one of the preseason, everybody got on that Pierce train real quick, too.
Yeah, it's almost like they forgot that Marlon Mack rattled off like a 17-yard carry, and then all of a sudden the holding on the other side of the offensive line erased it.
Pierce I was going to ask you about that, though, on the Pierce front, because I said to Brendan, here's a guy that was supposed to be an afterthought, at least in the early part of the season, and at camp they keep indicating that Mack's hardly getting any carries, that they've been focusing on Pierce and other guys. So I was like, well, do they know something we don't in terms of their plan? But you still think come regular season game one that Mack's the guy?
Either Mack or Rex Burkhead will be the first running back to take a carry this year.
Okay.
I think that's fair. But honestly, the inspiration for this topic, I went to Texans Reddit. I don't know if you frequent that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the top, I think 7 of the top 8 posts were about Damian Pierce.
Well, it's this city's running back star. They haven't had one since Arian Foster. Yep. Think short and easy, because it's not hard to figure out that they haven't had a good one since Arian Foster.
I guess. I mean, that's nothing when you're talking to a Lions fan. But I that's where I felt people were most drinking the Kool-Aid was on Pierce after preseason week one. I've told you, mine was Nico. I like Davis Mills. I think I have more confidence that Nico Collins will be a part of this Texans' future than I do of Davis Mills. Like, I like Davis Mills. I think that Davis Mills has a good shot, but, like, I would be more, I guess what I would say is I would be more surprised if Nico Collins is not a part of the offense long-term than I would be if Davis Mills wasn't.
I see what you're saying.
Because, like, you want more out of the quarterback. Like, I think Nico Collins will settle into the wide receiver two role. I don't know that he's ever going to be a wide receiver one, but I think he will settle into a good spot in the wide receiver two role. And those guys, like, they're valuable.
Yeah, the potential outcomes where that guy's not starting in 2023, there's far more for Davis Mills in a potential outcome situation than there is for Nico Collins.
Don't get me wrong. I'll be ready to down the glass of Davis Mills Kool-Aid if he looks good early.
It's a long neck bottle.
Do they make those of Kool-Aid? I mean, I guess they have the plastic ones.
Yeah, a long neck bottle.
I mean,
it's a very important thing when you're talking about Davis Mills.
I haven't been out at camp either. Not that that's a big deal.
Well, but I want to hear the other side of it.
Yeah, I didn't even ask.
Yeah, I want the other side of this. What are you not drinking the Kool-Aid on that everybody else is? What are you not as overly excited about with this team that others have been excited about? Because to me, it's like everybody losing their mind over the front seven after week one. I'm like, first of all, you're not going to be worried about a rookie from Notre Dame and a backup from the Rams. And, yeah, you have John Grenard. I think the biggest thing on the defense is going to be the secondary when the regular season starts. I'm not going to lose my mind over one preseason game on the front seven.
They've had some really nice performances in the front seven at training camp. Jerry Hughes has worked Laramie Tunsil, you know, a handful of times, which has been pretty interesting to see because you would think that 98-year-old Jerry Hughes should not be working the sixth best left tackle in football, according to ESPN, but that happens a lot. I'm really not bought in on Laramie Tunsil. I wish he wasn't on the team. I wish they traded him for somebody or something.
I totally agree with that.
And I just don't know if this is the type of guy that you want on this team in this situation. Not saying that you don't need somebody who's a really solid player at left tackle, and that's what he can be. And even when he's really engaged, he can be great. But I just don't know if the mood, the mentality, and the aura that Tunsil brings to the team and to the table is really what you want around this version
of
the team.
I like that's first I've heard you say that because I was the guy all along that said instead of extending him, you should have found a way to keep him away from him. It's the same thing with the Rockets. When you have the impressionable young guys you have on your roster, the last thing you need to do is deal with a bitchy John Wall all the time or a Christian Wood who wants a max contract.
I think the tough thing is if you believe that you need a franchise left tackle, which I think is something you might not be as...
Yeah, I'm not sold on that being a necessity.
But if you do believe in that, you either have to stick with Tunsil for now or have prioritized it this last offseason. And I don't know that I would have done their offseason that differently.
If you have draft picks next year, you can get a left tackle.
Yeah, and I think they probably will eventually move on from him.
I would have tried to trade Laramie Tunsil regardless of what I could have got, and I would have still gone with Derek Stingley at 3. And I would have moved Titus Howard to left tackle and not a draft at a right tackle.
Over who?
Over having Tunsil on the team.
I'm sorry. Okay, with an extra pick?
Yeah, with that other first-round pick, I would have drafted a right tackle.
I guess
I'd have drafted that idiot from Northern Iowa who's the left tackle for the Saints and gets in fights all the time.
I guess Trevor, I can get Trevor on.
What's worse, that or the guy from the Cowboys that can't stop making penalties?
Well, I mean, at least those guys are in training camp. Kenyon Green's not even practicing right now.
I can get in on going after a tackle rather than going after a guard. I think that that's a reasonable place to be. My answer, I've seen a little bit of Lovie hype. I think some people just get all behind any coach who's had success. I think even the success he did have, to some extent, was overrated.
The professionalism with which he operates compared to David Culley, though, it's hard not to be bothered.
I love Lovie Smith, and I hope he's successful not just because he's the coach of the Texans. I hope he's successful because I like Lovie Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see him succeed. What do you guys got coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
We got lots of anniversary stuff. We're going to take a look back on some of the finer moments and some of the lower moments probably from the Wheelhouse.
One day is not enough for us. I think we're just going to do the rest of the week as a overall celebration.
Is that we, like you and Brendan, or is Jeremy actually going to make it back?
I mean, the main thing is, you know, I'm here. And then whoever else is just icing on the cake.
Cody's
right?
The killer bee and Jeremy.
Cody, yeah. We will both.
Oh, yeah, or this.
Or,
yeah.
Or Detroit bee.
We will both be here the rest of the week. I'm not sure yet where.
Yeah, just I hope Wally Pitt makes it back.
I do, too. All right.
Here's to you, Joe.
Who do I say thank you? Thanks to Sean Mapes behind the glass for all the hard work today. Thanks to Joel.
Has anyone told you sound like Paul Gallant?
No.
I've
not heard
friends.
That one. Oh. This has been the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.